This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Deborah Ortiz, who's a Democratic state senator in the California State Legislature representing District 6. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thank you for having me.
District 6 encompasses what areas?
Most of Sacramento County, City of Citrus Heights, City of Sacramento, and our suburban north part of our county.
So you have a pretty short commute from your district to the capital, don't you?
Yeah, it's probably 7 minutes without getting on a freeway.
Okay, we're not going to talk about freeways today. We're going to talk about Proposition 71 and SB 18. Did you do something before Proposition 71 in regard to state funding of research for stem cells?
Yes, actually, I did a series of bills. The original one was 11 months after the Bush administration prohibited federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. My legislation was signed by then Gray Davis, governor, to actually allow embryonic stem cell research. I also followed that up with two measures that would have created bond funding that became the foundation with some difference in policy direction, but became the foundation that then ultimately became Prop 71.
And what was the fate of your legislation that would have provided funding, and how much funding would it have provided?
The two measures I introduced were Senate bills that one was to create a general obligation bond funding source, and the other one was a revenue bond. Each of those were stalled in the Senate Appropriations Committee as we had made a policy decision that year not to move new bond measures, and unfortunately we have a two-thirds vote threshold in the legislature for funding, and of course going to the ballot is a majority, which then triggered my work to do some polling, to meet with some of the funders, to spend about 6 months in a series of meetings to go to others and say, I'd like you to go to the ballot because I think the voters would approve it. I proposed about $1 billion in research.
And was that going to be an outright grant? Was that going to be paid for with tax revenues, or was it going to be paid for with a general revenue bond?
It would have been through bonding mechanisms, which, of course, you have two types of bonds. Lease bonds, lease revenue bonds, as well as GO bonds. But it would have been the same concept of using a bond to finance over time and have the state assume the debt over time for $1 billion.
Okay. Now, from what you just said, I'm curious about some more details. What role did you play in the transition from when your bill stopped in the legislature until Prop 71 was drafted and circulated? What role did you play with the people or the concepts involved in transitioning from your proposal to theirs?
Well, I had worked with two families that were really involved very early on that then subsequently worked with Mr. Klein, but I didn't actually meet Mr. Klein until after he had drafted the proposal and qualified it, and it was with the Attorney General's office.
So you weren't in on the takeoff of Prop 71?
On the drafting, no, I was not. This variation, that's correct.
Okay, and were any of the provisions that are now controversial and that you're trying to address in SB 18, as we're going to get to in a few minutes, included in your proposals?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think the four.
I guess I mean, was there the structure of the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine? Was there an independent Citizens Oversight Committee? And were there all the restrictions against modifying the rules under which the proposals would be funded that were all included and central to Prop 71? Did you call for any of that?
No, I certainly my proposal was not did not have a prohibition of against the legislature amending, nor did it have. It had an oversight body, but it rested. We were proposing to rest it with the Department of Health Services, with some legislative oversight, if appropriate.
Right. Did it exclude the participants in this process from conflict of interest, financial disclosure requirements, open meeting rules, and informed consent for the participants in the studies?
We were proposing to put all of those provisions in, and I don't recall where we left the two measures, but we'd either put them in a general format to require conflict of interest disclosures, or we were in the process of amending it. Part of it was so early in the process when it stalled in the Senate Appropriations Committee that we didn't develop them further.
But in fact, the provisions that you're trying to change or modify or amend here weren't included in your proposals, but they were included in Prop 71.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
When you wrote your proposal that didn't get through the legislature. Were any of the provisions that you're now trying to legislate out of existence or into existence or modify, were any of the provisions you're trying to get rid of now or change now in your original bill? Or did you have the same attitude towards them then that you do now?
I think certainly my philosophy of public disclosure would not have prevented that from being in the bills. No, I need the bills. And I don't have the bills in front of me. It's a dilemma right now, and it's been 2 years.
Right. Just talking in general terms.
We can revisit that if I can.
Okay, if you dig up the bills. But in fact, then, when did you first meet with Mr. Klein about this?
What was
the context?
Mr. Klein probably after... after he had submitted it to the Attorney General's office, I can't remember.
So it was circulating. It was circulating.
Right, it
hadn't been qualified, but it had been circulating.
Correct.
It was circulating. Did you have any discussions with him about these new elements that he had added that hadn't been in your proposal?
During the campaign, when I was invited to support the initiative and to defend it, as I did for many months.
Right.
Certainly those issues came up then, and they were a topic of conversation with those that were around. Mr. Klein, unfortunately, wasn't at those debates. We did have an informational hearing under my committee in San Diego, which we're obligated under the law to hear the initiatives,
right.
And, of course, appropriately under my committee. And many of those issues came out then, and we raised them publicly. And I raised concerns at that time, at the same time, I think, supporting the initiative, of course, and, you know, calling upon all of us to look at those and fix them if possible.
Okay, well, that's what I exactly want to talk about, calling on all of us to fix that if possible. Now, it's my understanding that the provisions of Prop 71 make it virtually impossible to change anything in it, short of another initiative. Is that right?
Well, I mean, that is not exactly right.
Okay. What's your reading on that question?
Initiative law has narrow exceptions in which one can amend, despite efforts in the past, including in this instance, to not allow it to be amended. There are a couple of legal theories that suggest that if an item is supplemental to the initiative, then it can be amended.
Who defines its supplementariness?
The Legislative Council are the attorneys for the legislature.
Right.
There are about 70 attorneys. Their job is to do legislative intent. They draft our legislation. It's in the Constitution.
So
they are the
right.
attorneys that have been advising us on which of the provisions and the reforms that I believe need to be addressed either through the self-regulatory authority of the ICOC or through legislation. We have been advised by Ledge Council, and we've been working with them for months, that if any of the four areas of reform that, you know, we have heard and others have echoed need to be addressed are supplemental to the initiative, then it is amendable in a majority vote legislature prior to the three-year wait. If it's in furtherance of the initiative's objectives, then it's subject to the three-year moratorium and the 70% passage in both houses. And it is a matter of interpretation. And I think the clearest example is if I attempt to govern an area that's broad regarding patient care and prohibition on egg harvesting, for example,
right.
that goes beyond embryonic stem cell research and is a patient protection issue, then that arguably could be considered to be supplemental rather than in furtherance of the initiative.
Right. Who all is going to make the decision about whether something is supplemental or whether it's intrusive or not?
The legislative intrusive is not a legal term of art.
All right.
The established areas of law that are exceptions, if ever, in amending an initiative is whether or not it's supplemental or whether it's in furtherance of those.
Right. Well, given that those terms of art, then supplemental or in furtherance of, is it up to the does Legislative Council have the legal authority to determine whether something is supplemental or in furtherance of, or is that a issue for the courts?
It is. Ledge Council is authorized to provide legislative intent, and of course, it's still always litigatable.
Okay. Let's focus on those four points, and as concisely as you can, talk about the areas in which you think Prop 71 needs to be supplemented.
The four main areas, and the first one I think is the one that is the most important, is how one defines the state's legitimate return on their financial investment, as well as assurance that the state health care programs and Californians who are entitled to treatments are, in fact, assured access to eventual therapy.
Okay, before we go into any of them in detail, could we sort of name all four of the main reform areas?
Certainly. The second area
so
is...
So the first is who gets the money and who gets the treatments? Would that be a fair way to describe it? Or if not, what's another way?
Whether or not the state is entitled to part of the royalties
right.
or funding from licensing agreements, and or whether or not the state is entitled to be assured of therapies or treatments that flow from the research that
okay.
the state finances.
Okay, that's the first
that's
point.
That's the first item. The second item is whether we need further clarification of conflict of interest provisions for the working groups or the peer review groups below the 29 members.
Right.
We know they're subject to the Political Reform Act based on the initiative language, but there's also the group that reviews the grant proposals that makes recommendations
right.
to the 29 members,
right.
whether they too should be subject to disclosure of potential financial interest in companies or stock, et cetera.
Okay.
And secondly, if they indeed do have a financial interest or their family members, immediate family members, should they then recuse themselves?
Right.
There's a couple of models in the federal law under National Academy of Science as well as the National Institute of Health. So there's more, one model's a qualitative one and one's a quantitative. If you indeed have X amount of dollars
right.
interest, then you should either recuse or you should be prohibited.
Is that the NIS or the NIH model?
I don't have which
okay.
model. There's two models that we're looking
right,
at.
Okay. So that's the second one, conflict of interest, how far down the chain it needs to go.
Correct.
And the third point?
The third point is whether more than two meetings ought to be available to the public. Right now, the initiative says there are two meetings a year.
Right.
And
two public meetings.
Correct, two public meetings. But it's silent as to the method of notice to the public. How does the public know when those two meetings are?
Right.
And it really is a opportunity for the ICOC to adopt regulations that provide as much notice as possible and as much opportunity for the public to observe the decision-making process and the deliberation of the ICOC.
Okay. That's the third point.
And the fourth point really goes to the question of patient safety. The initiative, I'm told inadvertently, repealed a number of patient protection provisions that I had put in place through statute that were very clear about written informed consent for women when they disposition of embryo left over from an in vitro fertilization clinic, clear prohibitions on, financial gain to engage in research and sell eggs. You can't sell eggs, but it also said you can't buy eggs, so this has all got to be voluntary and donated, and it also required that it be in writing. There's another little nuance here in terms of an opening in the language of the initiative that potentially allows egg harvesting, and that's distinct from product left over in an in vitro fertilization clinic,
right.
which has always been the argument. These embryos are being destroyed anyway. We should be able to use them. There is another scenario in which it doesn't even make it into an in vitro fertilization clinic, but rather a woman goes and has her ovaries stimulated, has eggs drawn out, never fertilized in a petri dish, never put into a cooling tank, then having the nucleus of that egg taken out and then that remaining product being either electrically or chemically stimulated to go into blastocyst or cell division.
Well, so the process is some people call it somatic cell
Correct.
Nuclear transfer
Absolutely.
And other people somatic call it cloning. Yes.
SCNT.
Right.
And the I think the initiative either inadvertently or in the manner it was drafted left open the question of whether or not that could be a new source of egg harvesting. And I think there's enough debate in the bioethical community and the research community suggests that that warrants discussion, review, and potentially, a prohibition. And there's another school of thought that says, well, as long as women are informed and they waive that and they undergo it, that should be appropriate. I think that is a whole new world in which it's ample discussion as to whether or not that's ethical.
Okay, I'd like to have a little of that discussion now. Why don't we go back up to the top and just sort of talk about what the current regulations are as embodied in the Prop 71 constitutional amendment and how you'd like to change it
with
your legislation. And I'm assuming, tell me if I'm wrong, that SB 18 is intended to make the changes in these four areas that you think would be appropriate reforms. Is that right as a general statement?
That's a correct general statement.
So where do things stand on that first point now and how do you want to do with it instead?
The first point is that the initiative's language is general, leaves room for further interpretation or definition through regs. What the language in the initiative essentially says is we're going to balance the interests of the state to the state's interest in recouping financial gain against that of the ability to pursue research unimpeded, basically.
Okay.
And which is a good starting point, but I think further definition as to when one should define a state's interest, for example, by trying to define the critical point in which pure basic research is likely to become move into the development stage, ought that to be the trigger that then say that then you know requires that the state will have a financial return on that development product if it's close to being a a product on the market.
Now, is there a observable standard for that, such as when it's passes phase three clinical tests at the FDA, or goes into phase one tests, or?
Well, the challenge is being that prescriptive. I mean, in one case, the phase three development stage may be appropriate, and another not.
Oh, okay.
And so, the challenge is, in fact, defining when that critical phase is. And it may be just legislative intent to say, at this point, you know, the state that is invested in the last stage of basic development that may have been built on earlier development would then require the state to define a financial return or waive a financial return in exchange for an assurance of an accessible, affordable supply of the product in our public health care program.
So part of this, apart from the other things that maybe we're going to go into here, are that the state will be empowered to negotiate a balance or a proportion or a demarcation that would either give money to the state or, in exchange, in place of that, assure the state the right to use that developed therapy for its own purposes at a reduced or zero rate. Is that what you're saying?
That would be any one of many options, and that's correct.
Or both.
Or both, if appropriate.
Okay.
I mean, and right now the language of the initiative solely authorizes the director to negotiate the terms, but it doesn't have guiding criteria, which would naturally be adopted in the regulations that this body will embark upon starting Friday.
Okay.
But I think there are some bright lines to be drawn in terms of principles that suggest the state ought not to be giving. There ought not to be a gift of public funds, for example.
Right. Is that an existing and more controlling principle?
I think it's an ethical principle that has guided past programs that could potentially fund private investment.
Of course, there's never been anything on this scale before in California or anywhere else.
You're absolutely right. This is a $3 to $6 billion financial investment.
Okay. So does the law as it now reads say that the state can that these grants can pay for hiring someone to think about it, developing concepts, doing basic research that doesn't necessarily have any payoff, funding early trials, funding later trials, or funding the marketing campaigns of the companies that have the products? Where along that continuum is the money entitled to be spent, as you see it, under the law as it now reads?
Well, I think everybody agrees that this initiative was intended to fund basic research. And this area of basic embryonic stem cell research, we have to all acknowledge, could take years on the really basic research. The question is, once that basic research, if at all, comes close to being a development product, how do we assure that the state doesn't forego a potential financial gain that would unduly, enrich a private company solely.
Right,
that's the financial concern.
Maybe we would help if we had at least a hypothetical example. If there's let's say there's the idea someone wants to know about epithelial pigment cells that are going to cure retinitis pigmentosa, and there are people who are expert in universities and private companies. They both get grants. They do it, and they publish papers, and the results are that they've discovered a procedure that will allow for the creation of those stem cells that can serve that purpose. Now, at that point, who owns the intellectual property rights in that, in those basic scientific discoveries which will form the basis of the commercialized products, and who has the right to commercialize
it?
I'm sorry?
The initiative is silent.
Ah, isn't that crucial? Okay. And after your changes are made, will it speak? And if so, what will it be saying on that point?
You know, this is really a process in which we're working with the commission to define that. And
okay.
I don't have the language of the bill in front of
All
me
right.
at the moment.
All right. So, but because that seems like a crucial, that's where the cell meets the road there, it seems to me.
I would agree.
Okay. And so what you're saying is your legislation doesn't specify that, about where that point has to be and what the criteria are that will be used at that point to resolve those issues. Is that right?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Your legislation is not so specific as to specify how that decision is going to be made, or is it?
Let me get the language in front of you.
Okay.
I'm actually happy to share that with you. I thought we had forwarded the fact sheet to you.
I've read the bill. That's as far as
that's the language that we have thus far.
Okay. Because I didn't see where it really spoke. It still seems to be in general principles.
Absolutely, and that's the difficulty as you define sort of trying to find the balance between what has been, quite frankly, not achieved and in some cases precluded by Dole on a federal level, which
right.
is totally laissez-faire and let the private sector dictate.
Right.
And certainly in some of our University of California programs, we have funded with public dollars the BioStar and the Discovery Program to do partnerships with the private sector that have been a case-by-case basis.
Right.
We've never funded anything in this level. So we're starting with principles that outline what how one balances that decision-making process.
Okay.
It brings a little more clarity to the general balancing test that is currently in the initiative.
Okay. And speaking of balancing, I want to balance going into depth here as well as covering everything that we'd both like to cover. How much time do you think you've got there?
You know what?
Very passive.
I apologize. I know that I'm supposed to be at my staff holiday party that I'm hosting, and I've got a bit of a drive, but I'm happy to take another 5 minutes or so if we're really going to stick to 5 minutes. I thought we were going to do a brief of
it. Okay. Well, then I'm hoping maybe further down the line we can go into some more of these things.
Oh, I'd love to. It's been a difficult time.
Along those other points, why don't we talk a little bit, we can assume then that in most of these areas it's kind of the same dynamic. There's some precise and some vague language in the existing law. You want to essentially tip the balance or add extra information to further delimit what the discussion is in all of the areas that you want to approach. Is that fair?
I think my intent with the legislation, as well as my extending an offer to work with the ICOC through their self-regulatory adoption of rules and regulations, is to come to the same place that they have indicated they want to arrive at, which is, one, assure the public that their vote and their tax dollars are going to result in gains to the state of California, either financially or through therapies that could reduce our health care costs in the state of California.
Okay. Now, you've got a list as specified as you've made it in the legislation. Have you considered just presenting this to the ICOC on Friday or afterwards and saying, would you please adopt this?
Oh, we did that in the opening. I mean, we've had those conversations prior to as I was on the campaign debate and certainly my presentation at the lunch at Stanford, and extended that invitation, did it again last week, the Monday we came back into session, and they met in Irvine through my
right.
correspondence, and we'll continue to do that.
Well, what have they said? I mean, could they, at their meeting, after they've adopted their bylaws, include your...
I'm sorry, you're speaking a little... What was the
question? I'm sorry. When the ICOC is meeting for the first time in 2 days at the university,
uh-huh.
and after they've organized themselves, is there any legal impediment to their adopting SB 18
on their
own?
Oh, not at all. In fact, not all of... As of yesterday, they were finalizing the appointments. They have yet to meet as one body. So they're not. They will be constituted on Friday.
Right.
So they as a body have not spoken on anything. Individuals have been open and I think quite in agreement regarding the policy direction. So don't know that everyone has been fairly positive about that direction. The question is whether the ICOC does it. But I don't know that the ICOC has decided where they're going to go simply because they've yet to meet as a body until Friday.
Okay. Well, I've read that they're hoping to get some of the grants out by May of next year. Do you think that your legislation will be voted on by then?
Well, the typical legislative cycle is, you know, January through September.
Right.
And that assumes it makes it through both houses and they get signed by the governor.
Right.
And then it's usually operative by January of the following year. So the earliest we could conceivably see law in place, if at all, would be January of 2005. January of 2006.
After which time a few hundred million dollars could have already been appropriated under rules other than the ones that you're proposing, right?
You know, I don't know. It would be a few hundred million. I don't know that they'll be able to roll out what is anticipated to be about $290 million a year. That's a pretty generous timeline, given that we're sort of mid-year.
Okay. Earlier this afternoon, I interviewed Tom McClintock, and he told me that he debated with you on this during the campaign, and that he raised criticisms along all the lines that we've been talking about, and that you assured him that the law as written would not have any of the problems that apparently you're trying to address now in your legislation. And he calls this, in his words, monumental hypocrisy. And I'm wondering what your take on that comment and that issue is.
Well, I don't think what I'm saying right now is inconsistent with anything I said in the campaign. And
Was he wrong when he said that he claimed that all these conflict of interest issues and all the informed consent issues and the working groups and all the things that you're trying to address now, he said, he warned you about that. He said it's going to do that, it's going to do that. And now he says you are trying to do what he said was going to be you're trying to address the problems that he called to your attention last time, and you said it's not a problem. It doesn't need any extra help because it's all going to be okay.
Well, I really can't respond to what Tom McClintock said because I wasn't there, so I generally don't do that. I think Mr. McClintock and I, in our context of our discussions, acknowledged that there was a need for further clarification regarding the working groups.
Right.
I think what Mr. McClintock may have misrepresented was that the ICOC members were not going to be subject to the Political Reform Act. And I don't want to misquote. I mean, that certainly isn't the issue. But
right, okay.
I believe that, you know, we agreed that the second tier, the working groups and the peer review model, is one that warranted further review, either through the ICOC adopting these regs, which most have conceded, at least those that I've chatted with, that it's a good thing to do. The question is the timeline for them to do that.
Well, because, all right, you haven't been specific to say whether you asked them to do it, and once they're in assembled and have a corporate identity after Friday, whether they will just adopt it right away, or whether you think this is a competitive process in which they're only going to do it if you force them to, but they're already operating under principles that say that they can't be affected by what the legislature does.
Well, I think it's I don't think. Well, one, they haven't formed as a body yet.
Right.
So I can't say what they're going to say, do or not do. Individuals that have commented have said these are good ideas, including Mr. Klein. These are excellent recommendations, and we'll do them internally. And, you know, I've always suggested that either they do them voluntarily, we do them cooperatively, or we use whatever means we can as a legislature, however limited that may be, to, you know, highlight and elevate and do oversight. And I don't think that's inconsistent.
Okay.
But you do realize that the body has yet to speak as a body.
Sure, absolutely. Sure, of course.
They haven't formally responded as a body.
Okay. Mr. McClintock said that he says he's going to vote for it. He's going to vote for SB 18. He says he thinks everyone's going to vote for it. He says he thinks it's going to pass. He thinks it's going to have absolutely no legal effect because of the provisions written into Prop 71. And he essentially accused you pretty strongly of supporting it in spite of his warnings about it. And now working to pass something that looks like it's going to change it, that will have zero legal effect, as a way of appearing to want to reform it, even though he said the only way to do that was to vote it down in the first place.
Well, you know, I happen to believe that this was an incredible policy. It was a great opportunity for California. You know, Mr. McClintock and I won't agree on he is opposed to the underlying premise of embryonic stem cell research.
Right, but
let me finish.
Sure.
Which is, you know, and I think that is a starting point in which, beyond which, I think, you know, whether, and he also believes that the state ought not to be doing any bonding, and I respect that. It's a different philosophical perspective. I don't know that my position is inconsistent with anything I did in the campaign, and I believe very strongly about the voters, know that the voters had faith in us to do this well, but I do want to protect the legislature's role, because with all due respect to the ICOC, if indeed they compromise or they do something inappropriate or invest poorly, it will not, the blame will not rest with the ICOC. It'll rest with the institution. No one individual legislator or another, but rather the institution. I believe in the institution. I think we have an appropriate role as a checks and balance with the ICOC, and I think the focus is on the policy and, you know.
If it turns, let me ask, it'll be the last message from Mr. McClintock, and then let me just try to wrap up. He says that the only way these changes that you're proposing could be put into effect would be through another initiative, and he says if you really want to do the changes you're saying you want to do in SB 18, you should start circulating a petition that would put it on the ballot.
I would invite, you know what, that would be a great idea, and I'm going to invite Mr. McClintock to join me in raising a few million dollars if that indeed turns out to be the only alternative.
Okay.
I'm being guided by Ledge Council that gives us a small opportunity in a very narrow area to address that, and that which we cannot legislate, given the prohibitions that are in the initiative, I think Mr. McClintock and I and others who care about the state's investment can use the legislative process, the oversight authority that we have, to shed light on this and to call upon the goodwill of all those ICOC members that I have been convened and I think want to do the right thing.
Okay, so the things that we should be watching for in the next year or so is whether or not, after they're organized, the ICOC on its own behalf adopts the principles and the regulations that you're supporting. It either will or it won't, and if it doesn't, the legislature may or may not try to impose them, and if it does, that may or may not pass legal muster, so that it's possible that your reforms could be in place rather soon if the ICOC does it, a little later if the legislature does it, or after the legislation and the litigation and a decision not to impose those standards on ICOC in the mid-2006, we'll be in a situation where the Senator McClintock's warnings will then be borne out or not by the actions under the ICOC operating on its own
Or Mr. McClintock
decision.
Can join me in getting his side of the aisle to do a two-thirds vote and bypass the petition gathering process and go through two houses and get the reforms put on the ballot for 2005.
For 2005?
Yeah, sure. And we're looking at a special election potentially, and we might want to piggyback on that and do a two-thirds vote through a bond measure, or, excuse me, through a constitutional amendment through both houses, and you know, make the changes then.
And so that could be the process is in place to do that if Mr. McClintock and
again, the threshold is higher for the legislature to put something on the ballot, but
right.
It's a two-thirds vote.
Okay. Overall, then, what are you expecting is going to happen in these regards?
I think I expect that all of those members who are now charged with this incredible public trust are going to search and understand that this is their obligation to California to adopt, you know, pristine conflict of interest rules as it relates to the working groups, to more clearly define what the state's financial as well as therapy and treatment benefits ought to be accrued to the state, as well as assuring the strong patient protection provisions, and step forward and include more sunshine and more public meetings and a high level of notice for the public to observe their ethical and promising work and realizing embryonic stem cell research.
If we could just focus on one last concrete specific issue, that of egg harvesting, and whether if according to the various scenarios that we've just discussed, nothing is done, whether those human eggs from human females that are essential to embryonic stem cell research and that need, critics have said and proponents really haven't denied, that they're going to be needed in massive quantities both to do the research and even more so to do the therapies, should the therapies developed using those human eggs prove out, are there enough protections in place now so that researchers would be prevented from, or if they're not prevented, do you have any objection to their going to especially poor women in California and the rest of the United States and Africa and Asia, all over the world, and saying, here's a check, submit to this procedure, here's a piece of paper that says informed consent on the top that you might not be able to read or have time to do it, and you're poor and you need money, and here's some money, give us your eggs, undergo the fertility treatments, have these injections, be at risk for becoming sterile, be at risk for dying on the table, be at all kinds of risk, waive your liability to sue us, your ability to sue us if anything goes wrong, and we're going to take those eggs back to Stanford and start working on them. Are there protections in place now to prevent that from happening?
Let me just be very clear. I don't know if that's your personal position, but I don't...
That's a question about whether or not that could be done or not.
That's a very
now.
Strong statement that I don't subscribe to. I think all of the examples that you cited are either factually incorrect or, quite frankly, hyperbole.
You mean that won't happen?
The one thing that the initiative does is prohibits financial gain. So let's be very clear there.
Financial gain for whom?
For women embarking upon the research.
Women can't be paid for their inconvenience?
They can only be paid for the cost of a medical procedure. Now, if a woman embarks upon in vitro fertilization procedures to become a parent,
right?
Those reasonable costs of wanting to become a parent are covered. A woman cannot receive financial incentive or profit to sell eggs. That's a different issue. Very clear the language in the initiative prohibits that.
You mean in the case of a woman who wants to become pregnant and is planning on doing in vitro fertilization, she can have that process paid for by Prop 71 money if she agrees to allow extra embryos to be used for research?
No, I think the question would be, she's already embarked upon that, her medical plan covers it, or she's paid out of pocket, she and her spouse or whomever. And then the question is in terms of transporting leftover embryo to a research facility.
Right.
Those costs, she doesn't have to assume those costs if she wants to donate embryo.
But she won't be subsidized in her core process.
I don't believe the initiative allows that.
Okay, well, that's in the case of women who want to become pregnant. I'm talking about the case of women who don't necessarily want to become pregnant in this particular cycle, mm-hmm. and who need money in exchange for undergoing fertility treatments to cause them to hyperovulate, to have those eggs taken from them, and then those eggs used for somatic nuclear transfer.
Can they be paid for doing that? I don't know. You know, that is something you have to ask the ICSC. My concern is whether or not non-fertility seeking procedures solely for somatic cell nuclear transfer ought to be allowed. And that's an ethical question. There is some debate in the research community. I think it's an unanswered question.
I thought it was explicitly legalized and encouraged and set into place by Prop 71.
I don't know that that's the case. The question is, if there's a discussion and a decision that it ought to be banned, then either statute should ban it,
right,
or the ICOC should adopt regs that ban it.
Right,
hasn't
the adoption of Proposition 71 put into the Constitution an absolute right of the researchers to do that and protected them against legislative...
That's not my interpretation of an absolute right, but...
Well, maybe it's not...
I think it's a legitimate bioethical question that warrants addressing and
I couldn't agree with you more. My question is, though, whether under law as it now stands, whether that's...
I think I've answered the question. I really do. I really want to be cooperative, but I'm overdue for a time in which I've got to go over to an event, so... Do you want to continue a conversation in the future?
Sure, I certainly would.
Okay. Well, why don't we find a time that works, and I look forward to that.
Okay, great. Thanks, and have a good time at the party.
Okay.
And good luck with the legislation.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, we're going to put your picture up again so everyone will know who to blame or give the credit to here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.